Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our weekly Hoops HD report, recording Woo-hoo. Live on tape delay here, a little about 20 minutes after 9 on Monday, December 13th. We would have recorded a little earlier, but once again, the puppet was unprepared for the podcast.
Well, unprepared, drunk, same thing.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, to my side.
What's wrong with being drunk for the podcast? I mean, what's wrong with that?
Once again, up to my sides up here, we have David Dorman and David Griggs, the puppet. Down below me, John Tytel. To his sides, Joby Fortson and Rocco Miller. Rocco, you can check him out as well at bracketeer.org. Great website that he's got. Is that a new feature, Rocco, that I saw today, that with the teams of the week and such? Is that, or have I just been missing it?
I try to do it every week, but honestly, okay. there's some weeks I miss just time constraints. But yes, check it out today if you didn't yet.
You got the teams of the week and the teams that just miss being the teams of the week. Absolutely. Something to check out. In fact, go read that. You don't need to do this podcast. So thanks for joining us, everyone.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, we got in under 60. Good job.
Let's go ahead. We're going to be talking about everything and anything that's going on in the among the major conferences, at least the 10 regular multi-bid conferences. And I figured I'd start things off. Well, those of you who've been watching the show know I'm a Rutgers grad. So I don't think there's any surprise where if I get to choose where to start things off tonight, where I'm starting it off. And we're not talking about that Seton Hall game last night, which was not that great. We were somewhat competitive. But of course, we are talking about what happened on Thursday night when the number one ranked Purdue Boilermakers came into the rack. And yes, it is the rack. And thanks to an absolutely incredible game by Ron Harper Jr., highlighted by the half-court shot at the buzzer beats Purdue 70-68 in one of the not only best games I've ever seen as a most incredible finish I've ever seen as a Rutgers fan, probably the most incredible, definitely the most incredible finish in that building. And it's probably going to be the best game of the entire year. And I know I'm kind of biased, but Tytel, let me just ask you, you know, was it that good of a game or was I totally biased?
No, I think I think you are biased, but I think it's fair that you're correct in terms of like when Rutgers was down 10 with less than 8 minutes left, I thought they were toast and I was wrong.
I was ready to turn it off. I was with you.
And when Harper got the inbounds pass after Williams made the go-ahead layup with 3 seconds left, I thought they were toast and I was wrong. It has to go down as one of the biggest wins in school history. And the most amazing part, not just that they had like more turnovers and were out-rebounded by Purdue and stuff. Like, they did it without Geo Baker, which I didn't think they could do.
Honestly, I've got to say, Rocco, let me ask you this also. I don't know how much you've seen of Rutgers with or without Geo Baker. So far, they kind of look better without him so far this season. And I think he was a bit of a liability. I know he's coming back just from the injury in the Seton Hall game, but he was a bit of a liability out there. Hopefully, I honestly would hope they keep using him off the bench for the rest of the season at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how those things work out sometimes, Chad, where, you know, you lose a big name player, but it also creates an opportunity for somebody else to fill in and step up. And I've been really impressed, especially in that particular game with Maywatt Meg, you know, coming in. Had a tremendous game. 12 points, did a little bit of everything to help the team win and logged 30 quality minutes in a spot there where he's not usually playing that often. So, so sometimes, you know, guys like Harper and McConnell might get a few more shots up than usual because the absence of Baker, but that can spread the love more than somebody that is taking the lion's share of the shots. And that can actually give you better team results in certain cases.
Yeah. Besides Rutgers in the Big Ten, Joby, Purdue got a bounce back over NC State, although they looked for a long time like they were going to go 0-2 this week as the number one team.
Yeah, it's not nearly as dramatic as your alma mater's comeback, Chad, but it really was amazing. I mean, they were at the under four timeout, down double digits. Yeah, you know, they were in trouble. They were on the ropes. I actually thought NC State had the thing. You know, State team who's underperformed all year. I thought they pretty much had it. And then Purdue goes on just an absolute tear, ties it up. Then I think, oh, Purdue's got this in regulation. And NC State goes down and actually responds and scores their first points in like 3 minutes. And then Purdue nails a shot at the buzzer pretty much again and to send it to OT. OT, the better team took over, and it, you know, it's a very deceiving 10-point win, as anyone who watches it knows. But it was, you know, if Purdue had lost that NC State game to an NC State team who has, you know, without Bates and has been very disappointing this year, we would not be still discussing it at Purdue as, well, they're still like a 1-2 seed. We'd be saying, what's wrong with Purdue? And yeah. Rutgers win wouldn't look as shiny. Let's see if Purdue, if this is, if, you know, the keys were unlocked on Purdue's ability a little bit by an undermanned, as you point out, Rutgers team. Let's see if Purdue, how they respond this upcoming week is extremely important, I think, for the rest of their season as an inflection point of, are you going to be a national title contender? Or are you just going to be in the tournament? This week, regardless of the opponents, will matter for that because of the mentality of the team itself.
Yeah, Chad, can you pull up Purdue real quick?
Okay, we'll go to the quick team sheet here on the left-hand side of the screen. You'll see Purdue loading up. Actually, they're already there on the right-hand side. So
They're already there.
Okay. You got double Purdue on the screen. Okay.
Very well done. To echo Joby's point, was it? I mean, they did get the win against NC State, and it's not easy to win at the rack. It's not easy to win on the road anywhere. But you know, I know that was their first road game, but to have two games away from home against teams that are certainly not protected seeds and maybe not even tournament teams, and lose one and need overtime to win the other one, red flag on Purdue.
I'm not with you on a red flag. No. They've already beaten Villanova. They've already beaten North Carolina. They've already beaten a pretty good Iowa team, albeit at home. I expect them to crush Butler this weekend. I think this is a very good Purdue team. So I'm not.
Okay. When I say red flag, I mean in relation to the one seed.
Actual rack and crush NC State. That's my point.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they struggle against Butler, even with a close win, that's more red flags at raise.
Let's go to a couple other teams here in the Big Ten quickly. Dorman, let me turn to you first with regard to Minnesota. Very impressive win at Michigan. You know, I think none of us really were that serious about the Gophers, but now sitting at 8-1, are you?
Pull them up.
They did lose the game at home to Michigan State, but Michigan State's a pretty good team.
Michigan State's very good team. I was surprised with Minnesota. I was sitting there watching Saturday late afternoon, waiting for them to fall apart, but they kept getting stronger and the lead kept getting bigger. It was, I really thought Minnesota did a great job on Saturday. Michigan, on the other hand, their opponent seems out of sync. I know there's a lot of new parts and pieces. I do believe Juwan Howard will get it going, but Michigan is not playing as well as I think they can.
Yeah,
but big ups to Minnesota. Yes, yeah, I agree, Chad.
Chad, if I can just point something else out real quick. While they are 8-1, they've gotten noticeably better as the season has gone along. Barely beating Pitt. Pitt is dog crap. You know, sweating out Western Kentucky, kind of sweating out Princeton a little bit, and then you know, winning two road games. What a week! Two wins away from home against really good teams, Mississippi State and Michigan. This isn't just an 8-1 team. It's an 8-1 team that's gotten better and noticeably as the season has gone along.
Just for those of you that are new to these workbooks and these team sheets that we're pulling up real quickly, what you're seeing here is this is our version of, it's not the same format the NCAA selection committee uses, but this is our version of it. You see the various tiers. Those are basically the rankings of your opponent. The numbers here indicate that, for example, a tier one win is beating a top 30 team at home, a top 50 team on a neutral court, or a team ranked 1-75 on the road. Goes out right on down to tier two, tier three, tier four. You even see occasionally in the tier one and tier two a separation. It's kind of a tier one A and a tier one B above in the italics above the dotted line, like that Michigan State loss is considered a tier one A loss. It's a, you know, top 15, top half of it. And we've got, of course, all the metrics here on the top of the team sheet, and the same metrics that we look at over here on the standings page. But Titel.
But Chad, I have to correct you real quick on one thing. The committee, they do have the internet in the room. They can watch this podcast.
They can watch this podcast, but they do not actually have our workbook in the room. We're working on that. Titel. The Illinois, another team out here now to a 7-3 start, but they did lose to your Arizona team over the weekend.
If you get to talk Rutgers, I get to talk about the team that lost to my guys. Okay. Illini had won 5 in a row including, as Chad is well aware, a 35-point massacre of Rutgers a couple weeks ago before the four-point loss to my Wildcats on Saturday. Their offense looks fine. They made 16 threes, and they had a 19-0 run in the first half that almost destroyed me. Luckily, their starting five for me combined for 14 turnovers, which is how we were able to come back. Good news, Andre Curbelo is, quote, getting better. He's missed the past five games. Better news, they have three games in a row against teams outside the top 50. One of those is Mizzou, which begs the question, is Missouri considered a cupcake if they're outside the top 150?
Yes. Yes. Have you watched Mizzou this year?
Rocco, before we move on, one more team I think is worth mentioning is this Ohio State team and what they did to Wisconsin, who I thought was a pretty darn good team going into that game on Saturday.
I think the Buckeye-Wisconsin matchup, early tip-off, I think it was a noon Eastern tip, and Wisconsin, I think it was something we haven't mentioned yet, had an incredible 25-point comeback to beat Indiana just a few days before. And when a team goes through that and then has to travel, I think they're kind of satisfied with their week already. They got a big win over Indiana. Now they got to go on the road. And I just think once Ohio State got a little bit of a lead going in the first half, Wisconsin just decided to kind of call off the dogs and be okay with the week they had. Nothing against Ohio State. They played excellent. They brought it from tip to finish. And clearly a dominant home team. Already beat Duke at home, now beat Penn State. They beat Penn State on the road. Obviously now beat Wisconsin at home. So Ohio State's a solidified team. And I think EJ Liddell's playing like the Big Ten player of the year right now.
Absolutely. I've got the upcoming schedule for the Big Ten on the screen. Not much in terms of midweek this week, but a few huge games coming up this weekend, including Ohio State, Kentucky, the Purdue-Butler and Indiana-Notre Dame in that doubleheader. Also keep an eye on the Iowa-Utah State game this weekend as well. Iowa really needs a big win. Their profile, they are sliding down at 0-2 already in conference. Yeah. Let's keep moving things along here and jump over to the Big 12, though. And
underperforming conference here. Wow.
What a
disappointing league.
The big win, Dorman, I know you wanted to talk a little Baylor, so let me ask you first, because what Baylor did to Villanova on Sunday was just, it was a disgusting game. It was awful to watch, but they are now the number one team in the nation as well after crushing the team.
Deservedly so, the number one team in America. I have not seen a Jay Wright coach team look like that. Like you just said, they got absolutely destroyed. They couldn't get in their offensive sets. They couldn't knock a shot down. They couldn't get someone open. And on defense, they had every bad matchup, and Baylor took advantage, and Baylor knew right where to go. And like Villanova never got off the mat. They got knocked down once, and it was over. Villanova is good, really good. They will be back. They are fine. What I do see is how good Baylor is. That freshman is phenomenal. I didn't think they could overcome the losses to the NBA Baylor, but they look just great.
They look great. Griggs, another team that looked pretty darn good, albeit that they only played Missouri. I'll give you a few seconds here on the border war and the results of it. 102-65.
It was a massacre. I mean, it was more of a massacre than a war. Mizzou was unable to defend themselves, and they just got blown into the sun. But I don't even know. Was anybody expecting anything any different than that? Mizzou's bad.
I wasn't. I was looking at about 10 other games at that same time that I would rather watch.
it was to watch the game just for the point of it being that game. But no,
right.
It's just, why would Kansas schedule that? Like, who would want to see that series?
Tytel and Joby, I know you both want to talk about amazingly a team here that I don't think we expected to talk much about this season. But Tytel, let me go to you first on them. TCU now at 8-1.
Amazing story. So the Horned Frogs lost 12 of their final 15 games last year, somehow have flipped the script. Back-to-back wins away from home against the Utes and the Aggies. They're not getting it done from three-point range. They're shooting under 28%. The defense has been fantastic. They have not allowed a single opponent to score 65 yet in any of their eight wins. Chad, they also don't start a single senior. So they're probably a year away from making the NCAA tourney. I'm going to learn more about them this weekend. I head to Capital One Arena, where they will face the Hoyas this Saturday.
Yeah. That was one of the things that Tytel touched on. A good record, kind of a bloated record here, but are we talking NCAA tournament good, or are we just talking better than expected and, you know, about five or six pastry cards here?
Well, they're going to have to do it in conference when you look at that schedule upcoming. There are no tough games, including the Georgetown game is not a tough game. And they really didn't beat anybody. I mean, Santa Clara loss is an okay loss. It's not a, it's not like you lost to a power conference, a major power team. They do have the LSU game coming up in January, so don't forget about that with the SEC.
And they did beat Uncle Buzz. They beat Uncle Buzz.
Joe, did you want to talk TCU a little bit also?
Yeah, or, just real quick on their NCAA prospects. The fact is they were dwindling badly in the J&G and the net and all these other things. What the wins over Utah and Texas A&M do is it pushes them and yet again the entire conference again, because they along with Oklahoma State, you know, were looking, well, maybe they'll be the teams kicked around, because it wasn't going to be Kansas State, wasn't going to be Iowa State after the beginning of the year, which we thought, wasn't going to be Kansas State after their week they had 2 weeks ago. And now TCU sets up with two Power Five wins. That shows the depth of the Big 12. And now TCU has placed themselves and anybody who beats them in a position to get quality wins. And that will equal yet again more tournament bids for this amazingly deep conference.
Yeah, and
Iowa State.
Griggs, I'll ask you about Iowa State real quickly. Very, very, very impressive against Iowa, I thought. And sitting here is one of a very small handful of undefeated teams left in the nation. And amazingly, number 11 in the polls now for a team that we thought was going to finish in 11th place in the 10-team Big 12 this season.
Yeah, they're off to a 10-0 start. I would have taken, if I were a betting man, which I'm not, I would have bet a lot of money that Iowa State would not have won 10 games all year. And it's not just 10 wins. It's 10 wins. If you pull them up real quick, Chad, they've lifted some heavy weight. They beat Xavier. You know, they clobbered Iowa. And I know Iowa is not in the top 25, but they blasted Iowa the way you would expect a really good team to win. It is not easy to win at Creighton. I bet even though they play in the Big East, Creighton's probably not going to lose three or four games at home all year. Iowa State went there and won, you know, beat a pretty good, what we thought was a pretty good Memphis team at the time. Those are four really good wins.
Yeah, they're there. I mean, I think they absolutely deserve that number 11 ranking. One other team, though, Rocco, I want to ask you about, because I love asking about teams that I can't figure out. And Oklahoma loses a home game to Butler, but then pounds a previously undefeated Arkansas team this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think Oklahoma, you're talking about another team with a first-year head coach, but a very excellent, proven head coach in Porter Mosier. And so you're going to have some mixed results. I thought they really got humming out there, of course, in the Tulsa experience against Arkansas. Quasi-home game, but I know Arkansas had a lot of fans there too. And when they get humming in their offensive system with the Groves brothers and Elijah Harkless, and Jordan Goldwire came over from Duke. I mean, it's not like Porter Mosier's starting a new team. He's got veteran players coming in from all over the U.S. to make up this Sooner roster. And, you know, they're playing better than I thought they could. And they really embarrassed Arkansas. Musselman got kicked out of the game. It was a scene there in Tulsa. And this is a game that's going to carry a lot of water, a 22-point win against Arkansas, a team that could easily finish in the top four in the SEC.
Yeah. And there's the upcoming schedule for this week. A couple interesting games to circle. Obviously, Texas Tech, Gonzaga, maybe Oklahoma State, Houston. Texas, Stanford, a team we're going to talk about. Maybe we'll talk about Stanford when we get to the Pac-12. They're looking a little better as we go ahead. And maybe Baylor, Oregon, a team that's looking a little worse. But I do want to call one more call. Go ahead.
I want to highlight one here. West Virginia going to UAB. I think they'll get that one is not an easy road game.
Yeah, I want to talk briefly. I was going to mention West Virginia actually as we flip to the next conference, but quickly, Tytel, the TCU Georgetown game you're at, by the way, to go back a screen here. That is the game that's going to decide whether or not the Big East wins the Big East Big 12 Challenge or whether it's a tie. That is the final game of the series. That will right now the Big East up 5-4. So you're going to decide you're going to be at the game, the challenge deciding game, among other things here. Why they saved that game for last, I can't figure out. But the other half of that series, though, is the Big East Conference. And the Big East Conference suffered a couple of losses. They suffered one loss to a Big 12 team in the West Virginia Connecticut game, as well as the Baylor Villanova game, also suffered, also got a win over a Big 12 team with Seton Hall beating Texas. But let's start with Seton Hall, who picked up who had a very good week with both the Texas win and the Rutgers win.
Very solid week. Did everything they needed to. I'm really impressed. I think Kevin Willard's team looks really good. They got some guys in there to score. They lost a lot of scoring from last year. Some guys he's plugging in. They looks to be going 8-9 deep. And they're big, they're physical, and they are well coached. And it's Kevin Willard's team, and that's how usually it is. And they're not big five-star recruits. They're kids that were ready to listen and get to work. And I think Willard's done a great job. And Seton Hall is in the thick of this mix in the Big East.
They are in the thick of the mix of the Big East. Joby, is DePaul still in the thick of the Big East?
Where did this come from? Oh my gosh. Louisville was kind of they went out to a jump on Louisville, and Louisville then took over the game at halftime with a nice 10-0 run. And you're thinking, okay, Louisville and Freedom Hall, they're going to put them away, and you know, all that sort of, or in the Yum Center. That's fine. You know, DePaul comes out like monsters in the second half. They win, and here's the long term implications here. So, you know, they get a nice boost to their resume. Thank you, Chad. You know, all of a sudden the Rutgers game doesn't look like ho-hum. And 8-1 is 8-1. And not saying, oh, this is, you know, they're going to go on and challenge Villanova and Providence and Seton Hall for the conference title. But what this does is they perform well in the Big East. Because I do think Louisville will rack up a very good record in the ACC and be on the verge, if not in the tournament. They have a legitimate chance at a resume that can be NCAA worthy. If they had just gone on, lost to Louisville like they were supposed to, and then bounce around, you know, people would have ignored them just like they did last year when they went out to a 10-0 lead, 10-0 mark, I think, to start the season. This is different. They have a quality win. Two, if you want to include Rutgers, though, come on, Chad, your guys need to win a little more for that. But it's real. It's real for now, and we'll see how they do in conference play. But it's not just a foregone conclusion. They'll be 9th, 10th, or 11th.
Yeah, there are a couple of teams that might be 9th, 10th, or 11th. But this was actually a very good week across the board for the Big East. You see only the three losses being the other two being Marquette losing the home game to UCLA, UConn lost to West Virginia, Villanova, Baylor. Rocco, there's a lot of teams we could discuss here. Real quick, how about the week for teams like Butler and Creighton, though?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, Butler was kind of left for dead after the Maui and Vegas experience where they got beat up by Houston badly, and then Texas A&M took care of them pretty well. And since that time, they played Chaminade in the last game. Nobody really paid attention, and they played Saginaw Valley. So back-to-back non-D1 games. And all of a sudden, they go on the road and play Oklahoma, that same Oklahoma team you just asked me about. And, I mean, just grind and grind and grind. Chuck Harris really, really stepped up, took a ton of shots. But, I mean, he's had 26 points. And, I mean, he's going to be one of the best scorers in the Big East. There's no question about that. And with some of the supporting cast starting to emerge, you know, the kid that really stood out in that game was Simus Lukosius. He had some amazing passes, some incredible decision-making, no turnovers. So Butler just got a really tough road win. And how much better does that road win look right now after what Oklahoma did to Arkansas? So you have to take Butler seriously, I think, going forward. And then Creighton real quickly, again, the magic of an early morning tip-off in the Pentagon against a BYU team that's coming off of a grinder against Utah State with further travel. Creighton just ran up and down, just pace and space, run and hoist. Whatever your favorite term is, that's what they did. They drilled a lot of threes. You know, Ryan Hawkins is one of the big mysteries of Creighton, transfer from Division II. And, I mean, he really excelled and really started to get his feet under him in that game. And Creighton, if they play like that, they're going to be a factor in this league as well. It's looking like a great league.
It really is. If you look at even the three losses here, yes, Connecticut lost to West Virginia, but they bounced back and beat a very good Bonnies team over the weekend. Marquette had just come off a nice win at Kansas State before they lose the game at home to UCLA. Villanova had just come off a nice win over Syracuse before they lose the Baylor game. Tytel, Georgetown has a good week even. Speaking of Syracuse.
I thought this team was going to finish like 14th in this league, but somehow like after the 3-4 start, they scored triple digits against UMBC, overcame a 10-point halftime deficit to beat the Cuse on Saturday. And then, as I said, we're going to see what they can do against TCU in their final non-conference game this weekend. Then they jump right into conference play, road trips to Providence and Creighton later this month. Good luck. They're doing it with a nice balance of youth and veterans. So the youth is Aminu Muhammad, preseason Big East freshman of the year. He seems to be getting better every single game, which I love from freshmen. So many of them hit a wall and then had trend downward. But the senior three-point duo, Caden Rice, Donald Carey, I'll put them up against any other seniors in the nation. These guys make a ton of threes every single game.
And Greg's one other team we can't forget to discuss is Xavier. Pounds Ball State and then crushes Cincinnati in the crosstown shootout.
Xavier into the rankings this week as well. One of four teams that you see, or five, excuse me, half the conference practically.
It is four.
Providence isn't there. Yeah, I'm sorry. But yeah, it was blowout city, and I don't know if Xavier's a top 10 team. I definitely think they're one of those teams that is capable of beating top 10 teams on their floor. But yeah, the Xavier Cincinnati game, it's hyped up as this big intense rivalry, and it is. Is it just me, or does the game normally turn out to be a clunker? Like it's had some classic additions, but most of the time it's a blowout. Most of the time it's Xavier doing the blowing out. And what I insist on calling, just to infuriate the whole city, the Gold Star Chili Crosstown Shootout.
Let's move on.
It is. The city needs to deal with it.
Let's first, before we move on to another conference, quick look at the upcoming schedule here in the Big East. You see there, we're actually getting to some conference play here coming up this weekend with Villanova, Creighton, Providence, UConn. Also a very interesting Seton Hall Iona games that probably one worth circling. So some very interesting games coming up here. And once we get to the weekend, much going on. Arizona State, Creighton, maybe the tomorrow night is probably worth watching. And
yeah, the crossroads coming up, Butler, Purdue, and I know we'll get to Notre Dame and Indiana, but we talked about the Big Ten, the doubleheader in Indianapolis.
Tytel, you going to the Howard Georgetown game Wednesday night also?
I mean, Howard was the best team in D.C. I fear that Georgetown might have just barely passed them.
Well, we'll get the decision. We'll find out for certain Wednesday night, won't we? let's jump over to the SEC now. And I think we got to start here with what happened at the end of the Alabama-Houston game, which was... First of all, props to Nate Oates for the air handshake. We love a good air handshake. But if you missed the game here, last second shot to which would have won the game. Here at the end by Houston is a tap back in. The Alabama player clearly jumped up and knocked the ball out of the way while it was on its way down. So the only question was it over the rim or not? Because if it was over the rim, it was goaltending. I'm not 100% certain that it was over the rim. I'm not 100% certain it was goaltending, but the rules provide that because no goaltending call was made, it's not reviewable. Rocco, let me ask you this. First of all, is it BS that we can review it when the refs make a call, but we can't if they don't make a call? If goaltending is reviewable, I think it should have been reviewed. Maybe they rule it's no goaltending, but it should have been reviewed.
Should have been reviewed. Yes, it's BS, and the rule will probably be changed next year. But they, given what the rule book says today, my understanding is they did everything they could. So it is what it is, I guess, right?
But with that, Alabama now up to number 6 in the AP poll, 8 in the coaches poll, 8-1 overall with the Gonzaga win, and now Houston win. That's two of last year's Final Four.
It's awesome. Yeah, Alabama's a wonderful team. And you know what? I think – just as much as they impressed in those last two competitions, Houston really met the moment as well to go on the road in that environment, be right there to win it. I mean, Houston's for real again. And so I think that's actually kind of maybe even the bigger point that comes out of this, even though they lost, just being right there one basket away. And I think, you know, Alabama is a team much like Arizona. We'll get to them in a little bit, where if you try to run with them and play their style, it's not going to go very well. And they're going to blow a lot of teams out because of that. But if you're a team like Houston or even Iona who beat Alabama, and you break this thing down possession by possession and get physical and crash the rebounds and throw some junk zones at these guys, that's your real chance. So I think, like we talk about all the time, it's always about matchups. And this was a super intriguing one. And so if we end up seeing Houston, Alabama, or even Houston versus Arizona in the tournament, just remember this game, because I think it's going to be a very stylistic similarity as we see some March Madness matchups down the road.
Yeah, there are some really good teams here at the top of the SEC, but I think we got to talk about some teams that are not looking very good in the SEC as well. Joby, let me start with you. What the hell's wrong with Kentucky?
Well, I was actually going with another
team. Okay, you want to go somewhere else? Go somewhere else. But
it's even worse. But I think Kentucky. Kentucky showed some signs of life. If you remember, I mean, they lost the opening game, but you know, that's no shame, you know, no shame there. But as we've all seen from the whole
Kentucky combo,
but I think Kentucky's going to be fine. They just need to find themselves.
They looked bad at beating Southern this week.
Should not. I think this is a case of Notre Dame not kind of finally showing what they are capable of, even though they've been slumbering all year with all that returning talent with Hub, et cetera. I'm not going to totally abuse Kentucky walking in South Bend losing in this particular case. I will, and segue to somebody else who wants to run with it. I think the real problem team is Florida. We gave them a pass against Texas Southern as a one-off. Yes, they beat Ohio State, but I think Ohio State is the one-off, not Texas Southern, after losing to Maryland. Might have a good name, but that's a bad Maryland team.
I'm not even sure the Florida State wins any good.
It's not. No,
exactly, yeah. Right. Exactly right. Kentucky right now, Florida State doesn't look like a quality win either. So, boom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's real quick take a look at these profiles. Griggs, you want to kind of comment about Kentucky and Florida?
First starting with Kentucky, to date, and this is a decent team, but their best win is at home against an Ohio U team that was kind of in that game for much of the game. I know Kentucky kind of blew it open at the end.
Well, we find out their next two games here. We find out a lot.
Now, I know that the net is early, but that Ohio win constitutes half of their top 300 wins on the entire season. And going to South Bend and losing kind of draws the attention all the way back in the next year. Is Kentucky going to kick it into gear or not? And they have sort of a tough stretch. I am just not a believer in Florida. I was kind of impressed with their win against Florida State because I thought Florida State was good at the time. I'm with Joby on them. I just don't – they have not looked the part. Okay, lost 3 out of 4.
I'll tell you what, a couple of teams we do want to get to, though. Let's kind of turn back to the good again, Titel. How about the 9-0 LSU Tigers? Is it time to believe, especially coming off of that this week where they had that nice road win at Georgia Tech?
I can't believe they're over 500. This team lost Cameron Thomas and Trendon Watford and Javonte Smart to the NBA. They lost Jalen Cook to the transfer portal. But they just beat Georgia Tech and Atlanta and are undefeated. They have a home cupcake coming up on Tuesday and then a fascinating neutral site game against a 7-2 Louisiana Tech squad in Bossier City on Saturday. They're getting it done with defense and have not allowed a single opponent to score more than 63 all season. And they're doing it with newcomers. Say what you will about Coach Will Wade. He can coach them up. Tari Eason was all freshman in the American last year at Cincinnati. He's now arguably the best sixth man in the nation, 16 points, 8 boards, 2 steals off the bench. Xavier Pinson was mostly a scorer at Missouri. Now he's one of the best passing point guards in the SEC. And the freshman duo, Efton Reed and Brandon Murray, combining for 18 points and 8 boards. I still can't believe it, but they're doing it.
Yeah, they're doing it. There they are on the left side, undefeated. On the right side, Dorman, South Carolina. Not a team gave any credit to, but a win this weekend over Florida State in comeback fashion. They've beaten the UAB team that we just talked about. They have a couple tier 3 losses, but you see more out of the Gamecocks than you expected?
I have, again, I'm not super high on Florida State, so the win over the weekend wasn't extremely surprising, but I do like the win over UAB a lot. They're going to Clemson in a few days, I believe. Yeah, over there. That'll tell us a little more because both are middling in those power conferences. South Carolina is better than I thought. I'm not ready to say this is a tournament team, though.
Okay. I don't think I'm ready to say that either. I expected, you know, them to be down there with Georgia this season and Missouri, and they're not there.
Frank.
Fair enough.
Upcoming schedule here, circle here tomorrow night, Alabama at Memphis, or maybe don't bother circling it because it's going to be a total blowout. But LSU Louisiana Tech on Saturday is also an interesting game. And this, you can see the rest of the schedule there as well. The big Tennessee Memphis game again. We're kind of looking, you know, Memphis again. Kentucky Ohio State obviously is a huge one coming up on Saturday as well. Let's jump on that note though. Let's head out west actually, before we head to the ACC. But let's head out west and Tytel, you are an Arizona guy. Your team and Dorman, you are also an Arizona guy. I think you both want to discuss them. Tytel, let me start with you here. On this now 9-0 team that is up to number 6 in the coaches poll.
Amazing. I thought our best Big Ten win of the year was going to be Michigan last month, but the Illinois win is right up there. This team has scored at least 80 points in every single game. They're shooting over 58% inside the arc, top 10 in the country. They have not allowed 80 points in any single game because of the interior defense, which is only allowing 38% shooting inside the arc, number 1 in the whole nation. Two cupcakes at home this week, and then a brutal three-game road trip at Tennessee, at UCLA, at USC. If they somehow sweep that, I think you can book them for the Final Four.
It's over. Dorman, you had a comment on them too.
The record obviously looks beautiful, but like John was getting to, the defense, the rebounding, they're playing fast, they're playing quick, but they're under control. Tommy Lloyd has done a great job. Dylan Terry's playing great defense. And if you watched Benedict Mathurin last year, you wouldn't believe this is the same kid this year. This kid looks like a top 3 NBA draft pick. He has the game. He gets up on the fast break and he's dunking and doing everything he can, getting above the rim. But then he's got a beautiful jumper. He's got a beautiful three. He passes the ball well. He's there on the defensive boards. I really like what Arizona has done so far.
Yeah, Rocco, when you look at these top 3 teams here in the Pac-12 also, only one loss goodbye between the 3 of them. The worst thing I think you'd say for this past week is that USC didn't completely destroy Long Beach last night. I mean, that's about it. These teams are so good. I mean, is there anyone else in the league that's going to even compete, challenge any of them?
I mean, time will tell. At this point in time, it doesn't look like it. You know, I think last week mentioned the 2016-17 season where it was extremely similar. We had 3 top dogs, all with 32 wins plus between Arizona, Oregon, and I believe UCLA that year. All of them were top 3 seeds, but then nobody else made the tournament except we had a team in the play-in game. So it was like 3.5 bids. Could be very similar this year, and it's shaping up that way so far. But without making any assumptions, I would just say, USC, Boogie Ellis had a terrible week. He was 0 for his first 14 field goals, and they still have enough talent around him. I think Isaiah Mobley right now could be player of the year in the league. The way he's playing, it's just it's mind-boggling how good those two brothers are, even with his older brother moving on to the NBA. Over at UCLA, Cody Riley's back at practice. He didn't play in the Marquette game, but I expect him back really soon. And I think everybody's going to start to see that what UCLA is capable of with Riley in the lineup. I know he was a big miss when they didn't have him against Gonzaga and Mr. Chet Holmgren and Drew Timmy. So UCLA is a force. Obviously, SC has been a pleasant surprise as well to be this elite so far. And we'll see what the rest of the league can do. I'm not falling asleep on the rest of the league. There's a lot going on out there.
Yeah, Stanford with a nice win over Oregon, for example. Maybe there's a little life there, but on the other hand, Washington State, we were kind of liking what they were doing. Then they lose to South Dakota State. It's a tough game, but you should have won that one. This upcoming schedule, though, Joby, real quick, the real interesting week, though, USC has a tough Irvine team at home, and then they play Georgia Tech on Saturday, and the big UCLA-North Carolina game, that's part of that CBS Sports Classic doubleheader with the Kentucky-Ohio State game also.
I mean, these teams have already proven themselves for the most part, so even though there are challenges this week, it's more, you know, I look at that UCLA-North Carolina game, and that is more important for North Carolina than UCLA. I think we can all agree. And we'll see, and we'll learn more about North Carolina than UCLA, because we already know UCLA is a top-class team. And so it's going to be fun seeing that. The Irvine game, USC, is very interesting. But what is, are we going to see on Saturday? Can Oregon State or Oregon do anything? I'm not saying even win. I'm just saying show anything about the amazing runs and seasons they had a year ago. What a Jekyll and Hyde state, let alone program.
I'll tell you, if you had told me that Oregon was 160 in the JNG and Oregon State would be 312 in the JNG right now, I would have told you you're absolutely ridiculous heading into the season, that these teams are going to be top 100 all season, and it's just absolutely amazing. Also, you know, I'm a little bit interested in Sunday's Stanford-Texas game, just because Stanford coming off the win, do they have anything? But if they get blown out by Texas, they're going to be the team that I thought they were.
Texas, I know we just talked, is still looking for their first big win.
I don't think Stanford's going to be that big win, but it'll help a little
bit. Well, it'll be bigger than Northern Colorado. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's jump over to the ACC. That's where we wanted to go next. And we're sitting here with I mean, I guess we already discussed the Notre Dame win a little bit. But Griggs, I guess maybe, you know, Clemson picked up one of the, like, there's a lot of red here this week, honestly, but Clemson picked up the win over Drake, which was, we think, is a pretty good Drake team. Is Clemson showing a little life, or was it?
A little, very little. Okay. Drake, a team that we thought was good, that could still end up having a big year, but that's kind of underperformed a little bit. So I was more disappointed in Drake than impressed with Clemson. As bad as that sounds.
Okay.
Well, what other questions would you like me to ruin?
Well, then why don't we ask about a couple of teams? Titel, how about Syracuse?
Oh, very confusing. They just 1 week ago they looked great. Back to back wins over Indiana and the Seminoles, and then this week fall back to earth when they joined the Big East and lost to Villanova and Georgetown back to back. They were in control last Saturday. 10-point halftime lead. So many fans in the stands wearing orange, and then it all just fell apart. Their starting five is great, all in double digits, very little bench production. So I think that as the season goes on, it's going to put a lot of pressure on the starters. Two home cupcakes ahead, and then they start ACC play against Georgia Tech later this month. I think it's going to be the same thing, where they're a very mediocre team. They sneak into the tournament and screw up my whole freaking bracket, and then they win a couple games once they get there.
Yeah, there's only two teams that got any top 25 votes at all. Obviously, Duke's still number two in the nation. They didn't even play this week. Carolina beat Elon. They are just outside the top 25. Joby, Wake Forest, though, does have the best overall record.
Yeah, and Wake is an interesting display, because they've actually, if you look, not just at their record, they've done a lot of pastry card, as Griggs would say, on that. But let's look at the internal metrics of net and J&G they're not way out of whack. And given how weak the conference is, and by the way, just as an aside on the conference, how many of those games in red was the ACC team leading at the under 1 minute? It's crazy how many games were choked away, from Louisville, DePaul to Syracuse, Georgetown, to Virginia, James Madison, to NC State, Purdue, Virginia Tech, Dayton. It was just amazing how the choke.
Yeah, not even on the screen here is Boston College just lost to number 321 ranked UAlbany. So
yeah, exactly. There you go. Pitt was even up in Monmouth, which is actually a team inside the J&G bubble. I mean, it's like crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, can I ask a question for
Wake's only loss is to that undefeated LSU team that we described earlier. And as such, you know, Wake's actually done an amazing job of, you know, responding. You know, we thought, well, Danny Manning, you know, who's now the coach of Maryland, as we all know, he had done an okay job with just not a lot. Well, it shows that what a real coach maybe can do. I point to last week's Virginia Tech win on the road. Regardless of what you think about Virginia Tech post-Dayton, winning in Castle is ridiculously tough. It's like winning in that place in Hoosiers that was the bandbox, you know, where the people were throwing crap. That's just a very tough place to play. And a team that hadn't gelled over the Manning era proved that they can gel in a tough environment. I'm not saying Wake is a world beater. What I am saying is they, maybe by default, I think that they very well could be getting an NCAA tournament bid.
Yeah, pull up Wake, Chad.
Okay, I was about to move on, but we'll real quickly pull up Wake here for you, Griggs.
Yeah. Because one of the things, I'm just not, they did win at Virginia Tech, but everything else that they have done just screams, well, yeah, but so what? You know, Northwestern at home, Northwestern not a very good road team, and all the rest of it is just, I'm not a believer yet.
I think the Northwestern win might look a little better as we go on here, and you've got ACC play. I mean, it's, yeah, if they're going to have to finish, you know, top three of the ACC. When you look at these these numbers here, it's not a very good. You look up this upcoming schedule here. You know, I guess the couple of things we could circle is the Vatech Bonnies game coming up on Friday and the NC State Richmond game. I don't know. As far as Duke goes, you may want to circle on Saturday. They're going to be hosting Cleveland State. Cleveland State has a real good chance to finish off a win at Oklahoma State. As we record this, they just went up 2 points with about 10 seconds left on my screen. It might be final already. Maybe final. Actually, looks like it's going overtime.
Okay. But
let's move on here, actually, David. Okay. Let's jump over to the American. And Griggs, let me ask you on this here. We already discussed the Houston game.
Yeah.
At this point, I guess the only thing to discuss is the fact that Memphis loses another home game, this time to Murray State.
And I'm very underwhelmed with Memphis. I'm not shocked, just underwhelmed. We all said, all of us, I think, before the year started, yeah, this is a super insanely talented team, but are they going to gel? They've shown indications of in the past of not doing that, and they're not doing that this year. I'm not a believer in Memphis. I don't want to say that it's impossible, but if you're asking me, are they going to pull this together? And I don't even know if they're going to make the tournament, much less be in the rankings at any point the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Is it a one bid league? And I'm dead serious with that.
I think there's two teams that I like based on what I've seen. I like Houston. I kind of like Wichita. I do like what Cincinnati has done on occasion. I think that they find a way to get a second one. If you ask me, who will that second one be? I don't know. Probably Wichita.
Yeah, I mean, you look at SMU, picked up a nice win over Dayton, but they have some rough losses as well. How about the team in number one? How about the number one team on the screen right there, East Carolina?
Another team that was terrible last year. They only won 8 games. They've already got 8 so far this year for Coach Joe Dooley. Their 2 losses, decent. Single-digit neutral site losses to Oklahoma and Davidson. Very tough schedule ahead, though. They play Liberty in Charlotte. They host Wichita State. Their first true road game is not until January. Like, when did they turn into Syracuse? Top 35 in the nation in three-point shooting. The key player has been junior Tristan Newton. He averaged last year about 9 points a game in a little over 31 minutes a game. This year, he's doubled his output, almost 18 a game, but he's still playing the same amount of minutes. Easy pick for American most improved player of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at the upcoming schedule, I mean, the games of note are obviously going to be Houston games. They're going to be hosting Louisiana, and they've got Oklahoma State, who might or might not be coming off of a bad home loss on Saturday.
This Houston team is for real. We talked about them already.
We already discussed Memphis's games this week. Actually, they're playing a couple of SEC teams. But let's keep things moving right along here. I don't think American deserves much more than that. But Rocco, maybe a conference that does deserve a little more time is the West Coast Conference. As I pull this up here, the Dons are sitting now at 10-0.
Dons are 10-0. Another gritty win. Fresno State was up 9 in the second half, and San Francisco really had to turn on the Jets late to get that W. Masalsolski played a tremendous game in the front court. Jamari Bouye, 2 points at halftime, ended up with 27, 25 in the second half. two-time WCC Player of the Week now, Jamari Bouye. Kid's got an incredible story. He only had one D1 offer. He's now a senior. Look that up. We don't have time to do the whole story now. But the Dons are sitting pretty now. Here's my thing on the Dons. They got a really, really brutal weekend ahead because they got to go to Grand Canyon on a Saturday night, which is just going to be full of rowdy Lopes fans. Not going to be an easy win whatsoever. The very next day, they go right down to Tempe and play Arizona State with no rest. And Arizona State's starting to play better. They just got two really good wins, one at Oregon, and they beat the same Lopes team over the weekend. So I just think, realistically, here's what's going to happen. They're probably going to split, and that's okay. I'm okay with the split. If they sweep, they're not going to get the credit they deserve because this is a really tough, daunting trip. And if they go 0-2, a lot of people are going to write them off. So I just feel bad because I think no matter what happens, it's they could be frowned upon. We'll see
how it goes. Won't write them off.
Yes.
No. We're the ones the committee are sticking.
I'll tell you what, 12-0 is still going to be 12-0, though, and it's going to be down to a very small pile by that point. So if they
I'd
get
be very impressed. I'd be very impressed if they can do that. Tough trip.
Tytel, St. Mary's had a very, well, I thought it was an impressive, even though it was home win, 80-59 over what I thought was a pretty good Santa Barbara team this week.
So the good news, 9-2, and the only two losses are respectable. 6-point loss, neutral site to the Badgers, and a road loss to a amazingly undefeated Colorado State team. The bad news, they also started 9-2 last year, same exact record, but they finished 14-10. Hopefully that doesn't happen again. A lot of power conference teams schedule cupcakes to finish up December before conference play. Coach Randy Bennett is risking that number 39 JNG ranking, neutral site game against the Aztecs in Phoenix, and a home game against a Missouri State team that has four losses all by single digits. It's got a very nice balance with the lineup. Five different guys scoring from 9 to 13 a game. And I got to give Rocco a shout out. He has been singing the praises of that freshman, Augustus Marshallonis, for like 3 months, it seems like. Yes. The kid has finally scored double digits in two straight games. He hasn't missed a free throw in a month. Rocco, I'm starting to believe in Marshallonis.
He's awesome.
Dorman, so the big question here, when I look at this, there are four teams of the West Coast Conference receiving votes in the top 25 polls, although St. Mary's only in one of the two polls. Is this a four-bid league?
Absolutely. I love this conference. I don't see how they don't get four unless someone really fades away. But this conference is really strong at the top. If San Francisco can stay away from getting picked off left and right in the conference, remember – I really believe this is a four-bid conference for a lot of reasons, but let's also remember the Missouri Valley, I really had high coming into the early preseason. They look like that's a one-bid. The Mountain West, besides Colorado State, really struggling. That could be a one-bid league. We just looked at the American after Houston. There's a one-bid league. The Pac-12, great at the top with SCU, UCLA, and Arizona. After that, it's weak. There's a lot of spots open. The West Coast will get four of them.
Yeah, Joe, that's kind of singing your song here. That where are these bids going to go? This is one of the places they're going. Are you with them?
I mean, the ACC is handing out about three of them. Yeah, from our preseason projections to add on to that. I mean, I agree. I think this could – and the key is it's once you establish at a conference, which we're pretty much there, now if they beat each other – or you lose to it, it's not a bad loss. You know, look at the net. They're, you know, you win any of these at home. It's the top, except for St. Mary's. They're tier one wins, even a home win of San Francisco over, or St. Mary's over San Francisco. St. Mary's gets a tier one win. Yeah. That just builds it up. And it's not like the middle, not the bottom, but the middle of the conference is going to kill you. If you slip up once to Santa Clara, if you slip up maybe once
Great
to
Walmart,
you
know.
By the middle of the conference, you mean Santa Clara. Santa Clara is the only team that is either not in the top 40 or not in the top 200.
I think at the end of the day, Loyola Marymount and San Diego may have not that awful of losses. If they fall games,
but you're right.
Tytel is basically
who you have to talk about.
Yeah, and Tytel just noted in our chat here, Portland might be the best team in the state of Oregon. So,
wow.
The middle and the bottom of this conference is probably better than the Pac-12.
I don't know. Chad, Baylor is on their way to Oregon. I think they are the best team.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I don't think they're there yet. A couple of other games to note. BYU is at Weber State in a big Beehive conference game coming up on Saturday here.
Big,
huge one. And the Gonzaga-Texas Tech game on Saturday is huge, obviously.
Yeah.
Let's jump over to – we discussed a little bit about Mountain West. Let's jump right into the Mountain West. Tytel, Wyoming fell out of the ranks of the undefeated in a big way when they lost to Arizona.
Yes, but I think the saving grace is when your only loss all year is at an undefeated Arizona team, I don't think you're on the wrong track. Coach Jeff Linder last year only won 14 games. He's already got 9 this year. Very tough stretch ahead. 6 straight games against top 100 teams, maybe even more because they're going to Honolulu next week and they might have to face some other good teams. They start 2 seniors and 3 sophomores, and one of the sophomores, Graham Ike, he only played 12 games as a freshman. This year, he looks like an all-conference player. 20 points, 9 boards a game. Arguably the best big man in the conference.
All right.
Arguably.
And I will follow up with Tytel real quick in that they could have shown themselves to be completely fraudulent against Utah Valley. They didn't. Utah Valley is a solid team, as we know. Not amazing, but a solid team. And Wyoming took it to them and won that game pretty solidly.
That was a 12-point win over Utah Valley. I put Wyoming up there on the right side. Dorman, I have Colorado State up on the left. Undefeated team here.
Front range action here.
But they are going to have one more big non-conference challenge coming up here. Not this week, but next week. Next Tuesday, in fact, against Alabama.
Absolutely. Fantastic game. Even if Colorado State loses, this helps them in the end. These are the games they need to schedule. They need to have in their back pocket with experience come March. This Colorado State team can play huge games, second weekend games, if they can hang with Alabama and top SEC Big Ten teams. The Colorado State actually looked terrible Saturday for 35 minutes.
Yes,
woke up at the end, went on a huge run, got stops, finally hit some shots and won the game. The rest of the game, it looked terrible.
It did. Rocco, the big question is besides maybe Wyoming, is there anybody else in this conference? And San Diego State's on the right there. They have 3 losses, so you may want to forget about them, but they were USC, BYU, and Michigan.
Yeah.
They're not bad losses.
Right, and they got a neutral game with St. Mary's in Arizona coming up on Friday. Aztecs are a long way from being out of it. Look at the adjusted defense rankings in KenPom. They're a top 10 team. They're playing Aztec basketball. They just got to get healthy. You know, Butler's been out for a few weeks now. And, you know, Matt Bradley's shooting in the 20s from deep. That's not going to last forever. He's going to get back to his normal averages. He averaged over 40% from deep as a Cal Bear. And so I think things will start to balance out for the Aztecs. Really good team. Utah State. Great resume already. I think they're still in position to be like close to the first 4 if they can hold strong through the rest of non-conference. Really tricky game at Weber coming up on Wednesday. And then I also want to say Jamal Baker's healthy for Fresno State now, and he was key and the MVP in the win over UC Irvine on Saturday. 18-point effort coming right off off the injury. And then also they had a little letdown when they almost beat San Francisco on the road, which could have made their resume and bounced right back and beat a really good Irvine team. So I think this Fresno State team has a lot of staying power behind Orlando Robinson and the nucleus. They're so much deeper than they've been in previous years. I think there's a lot of depth in this league, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, so yeah, we may be talking more about this league. Utah State, huge week at you. Not only the Weber State Beehive conference game on Wednesday. then they get Iowa on Saturday also. So
yes, yeah,
I'm with Rocco. I'm big on you. I like Utah State and Fresno State more than Wyoming or San Diego State right now. And how can you not mention San Jose State? I mean, this
we're definitely moving on now. One last conference.
Undefeated at home. 5-0.
Yes.
One last conference here is the Atlantic 10. The big new, I mean, the only team we've really been seriously following much of this season, given what's happened, how weekly this conference started out, was the Bonnies. They suffered the loss in Newark to UConn. I don't think that eliminates them for the at-large bid by any means, but I don't really know what else we discuss in this conference besides the Bonnies. Tytel, you want to discuss Davidson?
The very quiet Davidson Wildcats, who nobody's talking about. They got up to a rough start last month, back-to-back losses to San Francisco, which is obviously a good loss, and New Mexico State in mid-November. Since then, they've won six in a row. They should make it seven in a row. They host Radford on Saturday. And then a huge test, their final non-conference game, Loyola Chicago, coming to Belk Arena on the 22nd. And much like their most famous alum, Steph Curry, how are they winning? Three-point shooting, number three in the nation, over 42% a game. And they only start one senior, but they have great size. They're playing in a non-power conference. 6'10", Luka Brajkovic, 6'9", Sam Menenga. They can bang with the big boys. They got size.
Another team I do want to talk about, Chad, is Dayton. And first of all, they're you don't get more scattershot in wildly inconsistent than home losses to UMass Lowell at the bottom of your resume, and then wins against Kansas at the top. I know that they didn't win at SMU, and I know that they're any that is 100 right
but
now.
They, but they bounced back with the Vatek win, though. So.
They did, and I kind of think that as a young team, I think they're getting more and more together as the season goes along, and I think they're going to win a lot of games in this league. Like, they are not easy to beat.
Yeah, they're not. Joby, the Bonnies, even though we like them, they're getting some votes in the polls still. Their metrics are not there. And here's the metrics guy.
That people aren't, I don't feel like people fully realize how in trouble they are. And a lot of it has to do with the fact they're in the A-10, which is not going to give them a lot of opportunities for quality wins. Like all those discussions we had in the West Coast Conference, that doesn't apply to the Bonnies and their future. On top of that, right now, if you look where their metrics are across the board, I mean, the consistency is pretty amazing. Actually, the net's the worst, which is actually the worst thing, because if your net's that high at the end of the year, you aren't getting in. Teams need to be 70 to 75 or below traditionally. But the metrics of, you know, of strength, the record, J&G, KenPom, BPI, Sagarin are all in that 50 range. They, all of those metrics are almost for sure likely to go downward with a poor strength of schedule that's worse than what they face today. It's going to be, they're in trouble big time if they don't get the auto, unless they've run the table or only have one more loss. Which could be the case, but I just think there's enough potholes in this conference that won't be quality that will not allow them to do that.
Vatek on Friday would be a nice boost for them. It's probably not a tournament team, but it still should be a top 19 team from a power five.
Right. And to Joby's point and to your point, if the Bonnies are a tournament team, they need to beat Vatek. They do.
And the other big game you want to circle this week, we just talked about Dayton. Dayton had Ole Miss. Again, not a tourney team, but a quality Ole Miss team on the road. That could be something huge to get some of those metrics back where they need to be, given the bad losses they had early this season.
Yes.
I guess on that note, though, let's go. Actually, you may want to circle the VCU's home game against Penn State as well in that regards, too, because I don't think VCU is completely off the radar yet.
And Ace Baldwin just came back for VCU. Huge comeback from his Achilles, which is big news.
Well, you don't come back from an Achilles, so that is huge news, actually.
Quick recovery. Amazing, actually.
That is so. Keep an eye on that VCU team. I think, you know, another week or two, we maybe just talk a little bit more about them. But then I'll go ahead and pull this down. Let's run through it, all of you, for any other final thoughts on anything you want to discuss. And Dorman, let me start with you.
I'm going to give Baylor its due. Like earlier in the program, I was asked, I couldn't believe the way they dismantled Villanova. And I heard Jay Wright talk after the game, and he was blown away. So if he's blown away, I'm blown away. Mitchell and Butler are gone, but Coach Scott Drew has that team's focus. To be a national champion and then come in and be perfect with a pretty good schedule. They beat Michigan State. They've beaten a couple Pac-12 teams. The schedule's been solid. Obviously, just Villanova. They got Oregon coming up this weekend. Scott Drew's done an incredible job. They got some youngsters coming in that are scoring and hitting shots. And I really believe Scott Drew's done a really, really good job again. This team is a legit title contender again.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt that so far they look like the best team.
Yep.
But let's see. Where do we want to go next? How about Joby?
So on this show, we try to address conferences that have multiple bids. That's one of the criteria when we choose it. But how come we're ignoring the Ohio Valley? How come we're ignoring the MAC? I mean, we got Monmouth and Iona. We've got Murray State and Belmont. Come on, give me those conferences.
I'll tell you what, Joby, come back Wednesday night and join us for the Under the Radar podcast.
Yeah, we cover those. If you want it, we do cover all 22 of them. So
but you're right. We may see some of those teams at the top 25, and we may be discussing them on this podcast. Yes. Right, but let me move on to Rocco.
Yeah, so John Tytel's favorite subject, first-year head coaches. How about T.J. Otzelberger, 10-0 at Iowa State, Ben Johnson, 9-1, 8-1 at Minnesota. And look at these rosters. It's pretty amazing. So Eric Curry and Elijah Stevens, holdovers for the Gophers. But outside of that, they're winning with a guy right there from John's backyard, Jamison Battle, transfer from George Washington, waited 2 years for him to develop. Minnesota's getting the fruits of the labors over there at GW. Peyton Willis from Charleston, Luke Lowe from William & Mary, Sean Sutherland coming over from Lafayette Leopards. And these are the guys that are beating Michigan on the road. And they're only going six deep in their rotation. If you look at that box score, it's pretty incredible. Like just getting veterans that understand concepts and can go deliver like coaches' visions. And you look at Iowa State, like Iowa State basically had Grill come over from UNLV with Otzelberger. They get two Big Ten transfers in Cal Shure from Minnesota, Isaiah Brockington playing lights out from Penn State, a really talented freshman in Hunter, and then the mainstay is Conduit and Jackson held tight from Iowa State. So both these examples, you have two guys that stuck around so they could carry forward whatever was wrong in the past, and a bunch of mixes of young guys and veteran guys to build a rotation. Whatever the formula has been between those two, it's been dynamite. So really interesting times here with the portal era that we're living in.
I think you're right. I think Tytel loves first-year head coaches from what his Arizona team has done this year. I think he's completely changed his tune. But Tytel, let me go to you next. I know you got something we want to throw up on the screen here too. So throw it up there.
So I saw a leaderboard today that caught my eye, not because it's Arizona undefeated, but it's because Jordan Dingell, my Penn guy here. So it's been a long time since a Penn player has led the nation in anything, as you might imagine. Quick shout out to Ernie Beck. He was Penn class of 53, a little before my time. He just turned 90 last Saturday, but back in 1951, he led the nation over 20 rebounds a game. As of right this morning, our sophomore shooting guard, Jordan Dingell, is leading the nation in scoring, 240 points in 12 games. The team is atrocious. They've only won 3 games all year. Probably going to have our first losing season since 2017. But at least I can say, at least we got one guy who's the best in the nation at something.
Well, it looks like you may have a battle there with an Ivy League opponent, number two, with Swain from Yale. So we'll see how that plays out when we get to Ivy League season. Griggs, I think you're the only one left.
Okay. Again, to talk about Baylor and Scott Drew in particular, dating back to last season, they've won 37 of their last 39. And when you look at, again, at the shape that they were in when he took them over, I don't think any program has ever been a bigger mess than Baylor was when he got there. And on top of that, Baylor had never really had a history of winning in basketball pretty much ever. I think they'd missed the tournament for 50 straight years or something. And I just kind of have a hot take right here. If Scott Drew can keep progressing and keep getting better, he is going to have this program on the map.
Okay. On that note, I don't know. I do want to thank everybody for joining us here. We will be back, as you mentioned, Wednesday night. I think I should do it Thursday night this week for our Under the Radar podcast. We think we're going to go on Thursday night. But
I've got court on Wednesday.
So. Next Monday with another Hoops HD report. But on behalf of David Dorman, David Griggs up here, John Tytel below me, Joby Fortson and Rocco Miller, you can check him out at bracketeer.org to his sites. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again real soon.